Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Neo FM with myself, Patrick Donohue. My guest on the show today is Ryan Baldy. Ryan has recently written a book entitled The Dream Factory, Inside the Make or Break World of Football Academies. The book is a fascinating behind-the-scenes look at football academies. And I'm delighted to say that Ryan is joining me on the line. Ryan, thanks so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Ryan, as I said, really, really fascinating book. And for any football fans, I think it'll give them an insight into an area that they might have not thought about very much, I guess. But can you just start by telling us, where did you get the inspiration to write about this subject?
I think I've always had a bit of a fascination with youth football and with young players and talent development and things like that. Always like to be kind of up on who the latest young players are, who could be the next big things. But I think the academy world is quite closed off. I think, as you alluded to, it's an area of football that a lot of fans aren't hugely aware of in terms of the kind of day-to-day goings on behind the scenes at academies. So I wanted to, if possible, to kind of lift the lid on that, pull back the curtain a little bit. I wasn't sure whether it would be possible because the book was reliant on a lot of access to these places, and I wasn't sure whether I'd be able to get that because, like I said, this is quite a closed off part of the game. But fortunately, I was. I spent a couple of years travelling up and down England, visiting some of the biggest clubs in the land, from the likes of Man United, Man City, and Liverpool, all the way down to the Colchesters, the Shrewsbury Towns, Kidderminsters, and many in between, to paint as broad but as detailed a picture of, as possible of what this whole system is like.
And outside looking in at the English football setup, what really strikes me watching the last couple of tournaments and even just watching the Premiership is just the depth of talent in young English footballers, Foden, Greenwood. You could go on and on. Is that what, when doing your research in the book, did you find that this is this resurgence of young English talent, is that as a result of good work being done in the academies at a club level?
Yes, I think so. I think you always need a base level of raw talent to be able to produce a generation like the one we're seeing now for England. So I guess that comes with geographical and cultural factors. So that's the kind of raw materials that the coaches in the academy system needs to work with. But the end product that we're seeing now, these young players breaking through and doing such wonderful things on and off the pitch, is in large part down to a lot of really great work by some good people within the system. It's a system that's often derided, and rightly so, as I go into within the book. It has a lot of downfalls, a lot of ills, but there is also a lot of good work being done by a lot of good people. So I wanted to kind of show both sides of that.
Yeah, and you mentioned some good people, and you mentioned good work being done by players off the pitch. And one of the most fascinating characters I found in the book was Tony Whelan. You met him at Man United. He just seemed to be a really, really incredible person. You might tell us a little bit about him and I found very interesting regarding people who would be familiar with Marcus Rashford and all the great work he did with the school dinners and all the work off the pitch is really, really incredible. But you were talking to Tony Whelan as part of the research for your book, and he was making the point that sort of that sort of behaviours actively encourage within the academy. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tony, I met with Tony about a year ago. We stayed in touch. We've remained in close contact. And I actually spent the afternoon with him just yesterday.
Okay.
He is someone who's been at United for 30 years as part of their youth setup now. He was a player himself in the 60s. The late 60s and 70s. So he came through United's youth system in the days of Matt Busby and George Best and everybody who was there. He was one of the first black players ever to play for United. He also went on to play a bit for City, and he played in America. Then he came back. His career finished after he broke his leg. Then in the 80s, he went into social care as a new career path, working with the disadvantaged youth of Manchester. So then when he re-entered coaching in the 90s, working with United's youth system again, before the formalisation of the academy programme in 1998, He brought that element of social care with him. He has, I think he has 2 or 3 degrees. He's gone and studied off his own back, done open university courses and things like that to study pastoral care. And he's really keen to tune into the element of looking after these children that are entrusted to him into the club and kind of safeguarding their childhood. That's what he considers to be his main job, is to protect childhood. Childhood is how he describes it. Mm. So while the academy system can be ruthless, it drags in a lot of players at any one time. There can be 12,000 players within the system. And, you know, the very small percentage of those ever get anywhere near a career in the game. For the vast majority, it's a life away from football. So he's very keen to sort of make sure the experience they have at United's academy is an enriching one, and they don't feel like these years are being wasted. So as that relates to Marcus Rashford and all the things we've seen him do, United have a motto that they say right is might, and it's all about just doing the right thing in different scenarios and treating people with respect and with empathy. So for example, when they go out on tours, they travel all around Europe to play tournaments from a very young age. They're taught to be very respectful of the people who are working in the hotel, to leave their rooms in a good condition. Tony says, you know, the only thing the maid should have to do is come in and change the sheets. There shouldn't be bits of rubbish on the floor. It should be pristine aside from that. They encourage the players to give little speeches at each tournament to their hosts to thank them for their hospitality, present them with a pennant or a signed shirt or something like that. Mm. And they also teach them about the history of the club, about the Busby Babes and the lineage that they're following in, to make them aware of the fact that, you know, they're standing on the shoulders of giants, and that is an important history they're representing, that they're not only representing themselves, but their families and the club. And just to imbue them with that sense of community and of a social responsibility. And while Tony was keen to point out that no one at the club will wish to take credit for the things that Marcus Rashford is doing, he's gone above and beyond anything that anyone could expect from a footballer with everything he's done over the last 18 months. He said, you know, what Marcus has got is God-given, and he considers himself privileged to have worked with him. But you can see the roots of the kind of things that Rashford has done being planted in the United Academy, that kind of sense of, as I said, a social awareness and a sense of responsibility to others is something that is definitely encouraged.
Mm. And you mentioned there how hard it is to make it within the academies. And what really struck me in the book, it's really, really striking, the amount of players that are picked up at young level and they've a very, very slender chance of making. Is there any, it seems like it is quite industrial, like the amount of players that are going through the system and very few are making. Has there been any moves to kind of limit the amount? Because it just seems to be very unfair, because it's just shattering. You like, the book is the dream factory, but so many young people's dreams are being shattered. So I wonder, is there any moves to by the clubs or to kind of limit the intake they're taking each year?
Yeah, well, so some clubs will take it upon their own back to not have huge numbers of children at the very low age groups. Bayern Munich have set a really good example over in Germany. They've done away with their under-9s and under-10s teams. They're only recruiting players from the under-11s age groups and up. They want kids to just kind of play locally and play with their friends, play recreationally, be able to express themselves and enjoy their childhoods without becoming too professionalised too young. But as I wrote in the book, we're likely to see a similar approach adopted in England, because Bayern occupy a very privileged position in German football where they sit very much at the top of the food chain. They sit there alone. They've made a model of being able to cannibalise the German talent pool by signing players from rival clubs at whatever age it is, so they can be content to let the best 9 and 10 year olds in their region go somewhere else, because they're fully aware that down the line that the best talent ends up with them anyway. In England, that's certainly not the case. You have, you know, you have the big six, as they call them, these six elite clubs who are all fighting for the best talent, both at senior level and in the youth ranks. So I think it's, whereas it might be beneficial to everybody to say, okay, let's not recruit kids below the age of 10, 11, 12, whatever it might be. The one team who would renege on that agreement would stand to gain the most because they could sweep up the talent so that the current scenario that we have perpetuates. And that scenario is that under the current rules, the elite player performance plan is a set of rules that governs youth football for England's top 4 tiers. And that's been the case for nearly a decade now. Clubs are allowed to sign players to exclusive contracts from the under-9s level. So from 8 years on, they can sign a player to an exclusive contract, meaning they can't play for another club and they can't play for their school team or anything like that. But it goes even further and it goes even younger because although clubs aren't allowed to officially sign players under that age, they do run these satellite centres, these regional centres where they can invite players to train informally with them from any age, effectively. Some boys and girls are training with professional clubs from the ages of 4, 5, and 6. And you see Man City got in a lot of hot water a couple of years ago when a photo circulated on social media of what was labelled as their under-5 elite team. This group of 4 and 5-year-olds who were all dressed in the full City kit, and they had this sign next to them saying that they were the elite team, which is just quite an unsavory notion to be calling a group of 4 and 5-year-olds, these kids who are barely out of nappies, to call them elite and separate them from their peers and give them a sense of being better and being on a path towards professionalisation. It's not something that I think anyone would really see as being beneficial to that those young people's development. So that's the kind of unsavory nature of it. I spoke with some parents of players, some parents of famous players like Mason Mount's dad and Ryan Brewster's dad, and I learned about how clubs like Chelsea operate, I think it's 11 of these regional centres around the London area. And Rian Brewster's dad was telling me that when Rian was invited to train with them at the age of 6, his dad was reluctant for him to go, but he went because they convinced him that he'd still be able to play for his school team, he'd still be able to play for his friends. So they went along. But Brewster's dad said to me that from week to week, I wouldn't recognise any parents. I wouldn't recognise any of the parents from the previous week because they were just cycling through. They'd invite a player up and kind of discard them when they kind of run the rule over them and decided they weren't quite good enough. So he asked one of the coaches about it, and the coach said, yeah, we'll probably get through 350, 400 6-year-olds this year just to find the 11 or 12 who'll go to what they call their elite group at the main centre in Cobham. So it just gives you an idea of the sort of disposability and the attrition levels, because that figure I gave earlier of at any one time there can be as many as 12,000 boys in the system, that doesn't account for those who aren't formally signed. That only accounts for those from the under-9s level and up. So the numbers are quite staggering, and the opportunity to actually get a career in the game, and especially to kind of break through and sustain a career at Premier League level, those opportunities are slimmer than ever and are only heading in one direction. So it is a system that I think is ripe for upheaval and ripe for change in that regard. I do think that the sheer numbers are quite scary, and I think they're unnecessary.
And one of the feel-good stories in the Premier League this year is the form of Brentford. And you document, interestingly, Brentford have abandoned the academy system. They adopt a B team. So they've just figured that it's quite a cost involved in having the academy system. You might tell us, if you don't mind, Ryan, why have Brentford made that decision, and do you think that other clubs, because you document have in the Premier League Category 1 status, it is quite expensive. So you might do you tell us a little bit about Brentford's model, and do you think other clubs are going to follow their model by abandoning the academy system?
Yeah, so this is something I find really interesting to kind of keep an eye on over the next few years, because there are two separate directions of travel, and it's going to be interesting to see which clubs go in which direction and whether there can be a sort of meeting in the middle point at any point. Because as you mentioned, Brentford closed down their academy. They made that decision, I believe, in 2016. And the reason they cited was that they lost two of their best players, Josh Bowie to Manchester United and Giancarlo Pavda to Man City. And at the time they said, under the EPPP guidelines, which gives a fixed compensation fee, every player in signed to an academy is assigned a value based on how long they've been in that academy system and at what grade that academy is graded at. So the higher the grade and the longer they've been there, the higher the fee. And Brentford say that they lost two of their best players for £30,000 each. They felt undercompensated for losing this talent that they'd helped nurture. I think they were both England youth internationals at the time, if I'm not mistaken. And they felt that this wasn't, running a full academy wasn't going to be to their benefit if they were at risk of losing their best talent to the bigger clubs before they had the chance to development for their own first team. So they took the decision to shutter their academy. They released over 100 players. It caused a lot of heartache and they were criticised for that. But they claim now that they've kind of stepped outside of this bubble of mass youth development, and now they only operate a single B team, which sits sort of alongside the first team, copies a lot of the first team's methods, tactics and training methods. And they only recruit players from sort of 16, 17 and up who they believe have a genuine chance of making it in their first team. So they're saying that they're kind of not part of this whole mass attrition anymore. And it was a cold cost cutting measure. They say they save around £1.5 million a year by doing what they do versus operating a full category two academy, which is what they were at the time. But of course, if everybody follows suit, if everybody decided to do the same thing as Brentford, then no academy would be training any player up until the age of 16, 17. So there'll be no formal training for any player. So that, again, is not sustainable. I guess there has to be a middle ground. But at the same time, there are clubs who are finding the academy system works really well for them, whether that's lower down the leagues. Like, I went to Colchester. They are the lowest ranked football league team to have a category graded as high as an academy graded as high as category two under EPPP guidelines. And they really believe that the academy provides a pipeline of talent for their first team first and foremost, as well as the chance to raise funds for the club beyond that. They have set targets for themselves based around having 50% of their first team squad made up of academy graduates, with 50% of the playing time going to academy graduates too. And then there are other clubs who use the academy as a profit generation machine, essentially. And that pretty much is what we're seeing at the very highest levels as well. Clubs like Chelsea and Man City, players who barely make an impression at first team level, if they play for the first team at all, are being sold on for millions and millions of pounds. And that, although they have vastly expensive academy systems and facilities in place, these academies are more than self-sustaining. They're turning large profits for the clubs. So, there were three clubs just last year who made the requisite upgrades and put in the requisite funding to attain category one status, which is the highest rank for grading of your facilities and your staffing levels and your funding and things like that. So there are around 30 clubs now who are on the category one status. So there are still a lot of clubs who see the value in the youth academy system as it is, for one reason or another. And there are others who have followed Brentford's model as well. Clubs like Huddersfield, who've vastly reduced their academy offering. Bolton did the same. There have been a few others. So there are two different, very distinctly different lines of thinking, and they can't necessarily coexist. So I do wonder whether there's going to be some kind of middle ground to be struck at some point, whereby perhaps an academy system that isn't quite so large, that doesn't incorporate such huge numbers of players and doesn't demand such great costs of clubs, that perhaps struggle to sustain those costs, versus having no academy or having a really, really good and really expensive academy.
It's going to be a really, really fascinating. And I guess the pandemic will kind of put a lot of clubs under over the edge in regards to that. Before I let you go, Ryan, your book was long-listed. Anyone that loves sport books will always keeps an eye on the William Hill Sports Book of the Years. I think fair to say the most prestigious sports book award. Your book was long listed last week. It must have been very pleasing, because reading through the book, you could see the amount of work that went through, an awful lot of research and an awful lot of interviews done. So it must be very pleasing to when you got the word that the book was appeared on the long list for the awards.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, there are only 15 books on that list and only 3 football books. So to be one of those and to be alongside guys like Michael Calvin and Simon Cooper and Ed Caesar, writers I've admired for a long, long time and looked up to, it's really great to be listed alongside people like that and have that recognition. So, it's kind of vindication for the work. As you said, it was a lot of interviews, a lot of travelling, a lot of you know, a lot of doubts along the way as to whether it would be possible, whether I'd be able to put it together and make it happen. But yeah, I'm really pleased with the end product, and it's nice that it seems to have gone down quite well too.
Yeah, well, it's a really, really cracking read. And what I loved about it, Ryan, was so often when you're looking at clubs, it's always the players, the manager that are front and centre that get all the credit. So it was brilliant. I loved the way I mentioned Tony Whelan there, but there's other people listed in the book, and you kind of shine a light on the work they're doing. So it was really, really great insider account of what is happening within football and specifically academy. So it's a really, really, really highly recommended from here.
Thank you very much.
So that's great. Listen, Ryan, thanks very much. You've been very generous with your time. Thanks a million. Your book, The Dream Factory, Inside the Make or Break World of Football Academies, it's available now wherever you get your books, Amazon or in all good bookshops. And Ryan, thanks a million for taking the time to take our call today.
Thanks, Patrick.